Hello, fine folks, and welcome back to another episode of Venture Maidens. Before we dive in, I want to remind you that the Venture Maidens Campaign Guide PDF is now available for general sale on the 2C Gaming website. You can head over to 2cgaming.com right now and pick up a sweet, sweet copy of the PDF. The direct link to download to where you can find it in the store will be included in this episode's show notes. For those of you who backed the campaign guide on Kickstarter, you should have already received an email from BackerKit with your free download link, so make sure to double-check your junk box if you haven't seen that come through yet. And for the rest of you waiting on your physical copies of the book, I'm happy to say the files are officially out of our hands and with the printer. That means that we'll be working with the printers over the next few months to prep those pages, do quality checks with pre-press copies, and all that good stuff before we ship out the completed physical book in February of 2023. Thank you again for the love, support, and patience it took to get us here. We are so proud of everything this guide has become, and we know that you will love it as much as we do. I also want to say a big thank you to Emily Mayo for composing our theme song, to Tabletop Audio for providing additional ambient music, and to listeners like you who keep the show running with monthly Patreon donations. We really could not be doing any of this without the kind-hearted folks who toss us those coins. So thank you. Thank you, you angels. That's all the business, so I'm going to hit you with a quick recap of what happened last time, then we'll start the adventure. Last time, on Venture Maidens. Our heroes arrived at Tailmoor in time to witness a large stake and bonfire being built in the center of town. After some investigative work, the crew discovered a local woman named Lorelei was in danger of being burned as a witch following the mysterious disappearance of the mayor's daughter, a much-loved girl named Gwen. With a few fresh leads to guide them, the maidens set out on Gwen's trail towards the haunted Castle Dread. And that's what happened! So now, here's the show.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale! With dark deeds aplenty to swallow, our team sets off with leads to follow. What awaits at Castle Dread is known only by the dead. Remember the name as we head into favor. Episode 25, Ugly Duckling.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Venture Maidens. Oh my goodness. It is episode 25.
Holy shit.
Look at us. Wow. I know. We had 100 episodes, technically, in the Fate campaign, and here we are at episode 25. 25% of the way to 100 episodes.
Wild. No? I don't believe you.
Yep. well, the math is there. The numbers are there. It's very exciting. Yeah, so I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to be here. We've learned so much about the world and this campaign, and it's going to be good. Yeah. Oh, hey, for those of you who don't know who we are, welcome. We are the Venture Maidens. We're a D&D actual play 5th edition stream that converts to a podcast. And yeah, we play in a homebrew world called The Plains, which is detailed in the Venture Maidens campaign guide. I should say also this is a very adult-themed stream, so you can expect mature themes in all of our episodes. We just keep a general content warning for body horror, just because, you know, graphic fantasy violence. Also, for this episode and the next episode, we do have a couple of darker themes, content warnings you should be aware of, including references of harm to children, grief, and psychological horror are going to be big themes in this episode and the next. So if those are things you don't feel up to handle right now, this may not be the stream for you to watch or the episode for you to listen to. But with that, let's go ahead and dive in. Hey everybody, my name is Celeste Konowich, and tonight I will be your dungeon master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I'm going to be playing Luveri Sath, your drow rogue.
Hello, I'm Nassim Etemad, and I'm playing your half-orc fighter, Fetonia Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and tonight I will be your blissful bard, Aoife Flannery.
Yes, and not only are you just all those, you're also a little bit monster right now. But we'll get to that. But before that, something very exciting that we actually didn't announce on screen or while we were recording, so I'm going to tell you now. At the end of last time, we all leveled up! Yay! So we are now all level 5. That's really when class features start to pop off, and we've got a lot of good stuff. So, and before we, you know, dive into the action, I wanted to go around and give everybody a chance to say what they've got at level 5 and what cool new stuff we can expect to see. So, who wants to go first?
I'm pretty basic as a fighter.
You get
she basic, but we love it because mm-hmm. we get that extra attack finally. Oh,
so good. Yes, finally.
Finally. Obviously a bump up in our proficiency bonus, so a lot of big numbers now. Woo!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh man, extra attack is just killer. I was very excited for you all to get extra attacks because I keep thinking you should have them already in combat.
Only Tony gets it.
Whoa, when mm-hmm. When do rogues get it?
They never do. They only have their bonus action.
Yeah, you do enough. You do enough damage.
Listen, I do my job.
Listen, speaking of rogues, what does Lou get at level 5 now?
Obviously, HP and proficiency bump. I also get another d6, so I'm up to 3d6 on my sneak attack damage. I get my uncanny dodge, so I can decide that I'm going to half a damage. And last but not least, I get my drow feature of the darkness spell at 5th level. Don't know if I'll ever use that, but I got it!
You know what? You got it, so it's all good. Incredible. Aoife, what do you get? What do bards get 5th level?
So our bardic inspiration gets bumped up from a d6 to a d8, which is very exciting. Ooh! And then we get the font of inspiration. So whenever I take a short or long rest, my pool of bardic inspiration fills up as opposed to just a long rest. And then we get access to level 3 spells. Hell yeah, so we're going to be upcasting. And then with our new spell slot, we decided to take a healing word because these fools are always getting into the mix, always needed help, and we just need a little bit Thank more you. To stack on there.
We're getting more slowly, incrementally more proficient at healing. I have been working on my herbalism kit skills, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We have some potions now, so we've got some resources. We've gone from zero to hero. It's all good.
Just like that.
Love it. Love it. So I'm very excited to be throwing harder hitting enemies at you all. Because you know what? You can handle it. We've earned it. So let's go ahead and dive in. We've got a lot of pieces in play from last time. So obviously, if there's anything that comes up or any information, clues that you all need, I'm happy to restate anything. So just ask questions. But yeah, so at the very end of that session, you had all met back together after holding your various investigations, talking to members of the town, investigating the cottage, figuring out more about this missing horse. And now you finally have a good lead and maybe a picture of what happened. So you know that about 2 nights ago, the mayor's daughter, a girl named Gwen, went missing. Lorelai was accused of being involved in that and is now going to be burned at the stake in the morning for being a witch, which are long-term expectations, and that has just rolled into the Gwen is missing, and most of the townspeople, they're scared, they're angry, they're being stirred up by Hugo, the local priest, to think that Lorelai had something to do with this. So you have a very limited amount of time to prove Lorelai's innocence, hopefully by finding Gwen. To make matters worse, kind of mount accusation here, Lorelai's daughter named Rook, who Lorelai did admit is different. She changes apparently into something during the full moon and because she was bitten by something as a young child. So to make matters worse, Rook is also gone, which is kind of fed into the townspeople's thoughts that Rook was probably working with her mother to maybe kill Gwen, drag her off, whatever. So you are now on Gwen's trail. You know that 2 nights ago, there was a horse that was taken out of town by somebody with a lot of money, and it was heading north towards Castle Dread, which is apparently this haunted castle that's long abandoned up the northern road, about a day's ride. And this place also, on top of everything you had, the land a long time ago had all these problems, fell into issues when a champion, who you learned was named Penny, went to this Castle Dread to try and defeat the Lady of Shadow and never came out. Since then, things have been really bad. So if Gwen really is headed to this castle, this haunted-ass castle,
Who knows? Who knows what's going on? So that's where we're at. But before we actually dive in, we start with a dream. A dream that you all now have gotten quite used to. It's happened twice before, ever since you stepped into this world. You've begun with this dream. So you find yourselves back in that familiar study with the roaring fire and the plush carpets, and you all as your young selves huddled in jammies and blankets with this woman on this rocking chair in front of you, the same woman you've seen now twice, this raven-haired woman with pale skin and these green eyes. And she clears her throat and turns to the next page as she finishes the chapter, and she looks up at you all once again. So, I know things are getting a little scary. Are we okay to still keep reading, everyone?
Yeah! Young Aoife shouts from underneath the blanket that she has, like, clenched under her chin.
You all are such good listeners. It's very nice. We usually don't make it this far in the story.
We can make it a little farther if we stop taking breaks.
And she, the woman laughs as, all right, fair enough. Okay, well then let's begin.
Wait, Lou's been raising her hand for like 5 minutes.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes.
Ma'am, I have a question. Are Gwen and Rook girlfriends?
Well, I don't know, but I suppose they could be. Maybe we'll learn more if we listen.
Okay, I just think that you're a really good listener if you added more romance, so carry on.
Well, I'll see what I can do. And she begins to read again. And so our heroes hurried away from the troubled people of Tailmoor to find the missing girls. They traveled swiftly up the road towards the haunted Castle Dread, acutely aware that every hour brought Lorelai one step closer towards her cruel fate. A few miles from the ancient castle, they encountered a gruesome sight. Signs of a massacre were strewn across the road. Shredded remains washed clean by the pouring rain left our hunters wondering if they were too late to save the mayor's daughter. And as this happens, the dream fades away. And just as was described to you, you all are back in those hunters' bodies. All of you, all three of you, on horses that you had managed to get just at the end of last time. Vittoria had given you her purse so you could make haste to follow as quickly as possible on the trail of Gwen and potentially Rook. And you've been riding hard, like pushing the horses as fast as they'll go because time is of the essence. And with the pouring rain and everything, it's been miserable. But finally, the long, dusty road, dirt road that leads out of town up to the north, it's just been winding and winding. You've been seeing nothing but like bleak countryside on either side of you, the twisted black trees that form the heavily wooded area. That's basically all just the wildlands that surround Tailmoor. And it's been that for so many hours that when you see something on the road, it absolutely catches your attention. So you're maybe 100 feet away or so from this site, and it is hard to see it through the pouring rain. There is absolutely, it just has not let up. That light drizzly rain has turned to a full-blown storm at this point. You can just see the outlines, the shapes of, it looks like bodies heaped up along the road. So here you are about 100 feet away or so from this.
Did these bodies, are they very decayed, or can we tell like what was their, how were they killed? Their big open wounds.
So you're at a point where you can just see like these forms here. So you can choose to stop, or if you want to approach to investigate, you absolutely can. But it is up to you at this point if you want to stop and converse, or if you just want to go ahead and like run right over to them.
I mean, considering we came into this world fighting undead, I don't think I need to invite that again. So, Nah, if I can't tell from there, we can just keep moving.
Yeah, so it's like, it absolutely blocks your path. So there's no way you're going to be able to continue on the road. It looks like a big ass something happened in the middle of the road. And you're just on a single lane road, right? With like pretty dense packed trees on either side.
I think we gotta clear the road if we want to keep on with the horses.
That or hop off, walk through dense forest.
I don't like that. I don't know. I mean, we should investigate. For all we know, this is going to be Gwen, one of these bodies or something like that. I'd hate for it to be, but I think that we can make most haste if we check it out and then clear our way so we can continue on with the horses. But definitely we should keep our guards up because things don't like to stay dead anymore, as it turns out.
Sure don't. All right. So you're going up to investigate?
Dismount. Yeah.
Yes, I say we get off the horses here, tether them to the nearest tree, and then walk over ourselves so that they don't get spooked or run off or probably attacked.
There is no shortage of trees just off the road for you to, you know, tie them off, and you can absolutely approach. So yeah, let's call it like late afternoon at this point, moving into evening, so 5 p.m., 6 p.m. So the sky above is still really cloudy, but there is like that gray kind of light that comes through every once in a while between those, you know, black roiling storm clouds in the sky. So you can see pretty well as you get closer to these. And just as you suspected from the road, it looks like there were quite a few of these humanoid bodies that they're shredded. You see limbs like torn from pieces to pieces. And if it wasn't raining, you are sure the scene would be just red with blood, but it has soaked into the earth and washed away in this time. So it's hard to tell exactly because most of the bodies aren't intact enough to get a count, but at least six. And then one on the far edge probably catches your attention the most, just a little bit out of the road. You see a very large, dark body of a four-legged creature that might have been a horse.
Go check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, so you look at it just with a cursory inspection. Yeah, it looks like the remains of a black horse. I mean, you can make a medicine check, but like, it just looks torn apart.
Can we make any, as monster hunters, any kind of check to figure out what could have done this?
Yeah, I like it. I would accept, yeah, what do you want to use? I think investigation or arcana, nature would all be good. Medicine, survival, maybe? I could see the case for any of those.
I can do an investigation. What do we got? 13 plus 8, so 21.
Holy shit. Okay. For your investigation, you would note, it doesn't look like there's anything missing, like, from any of the human bodies. So, like, all the pieces are accounted for. Like, they've been just kind of shredded up and stuff. Large pieces of the horse are gone. So maybe they've been consumed would be your guess. And it does look like the wounds on the horses are more like something that would happen with like teeth or bite marks. You find a few on the horse. As you're looking at the other bodies, they've mostly been cut clean, like sliced through. So you think whatever took apart the bodies was not the same thing that took apart the horse. There's something odd about the flesh on all of them. It's gray and soft, and like in the way an undead's body would be, as opposed to a human that just died. So you think these were probably undead creatures.
Can my vampire senses sense that just like passively at all, I wonder?
If you would like to use call on your abilities and check off a box.
Okay. No, thank you.
Keep that in the back pocket.
You can do a lot of things using your monstrous things, but you always have to check off a box to do so.
For sure.
Do we see any, like, humanoid tracks from the horse? Because I assume undead attacked Gwen, and hopefully she fleed, because we don't see a body that is, like, lifelike in any way at this point.
If you want tracks, someone will have to make a survival check.
I can do that. I have proficiency in survival.
I'll help you.
Yeah, looking around. So roll with advantage since Lewis is assisting.
Natural 20!
Woo! Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, you guys.
24. Right.
We've only rolled above 20s so far, so hopefully we're getting them all out now.
No! So hopefully this continues.
So as you are looking around, I mean, the road is, luckily the road is pretty well packed. So like it's not, it hasn't gone muddy even with all of this rain here, but the tracks are very confusing. Anyone who had not rolled a natural 20 would probably not be able to tell this, but you can kind of scoot some of the bodies to the side and see a little bit more of what was happening in the places that were like shielded from the rain. There is an absolute confused mass of steps, and it looks like heavy steps or kind of drag steps, something that you would probably, some the monster hunter in you would be like, undead. Like the weird shuffling way they kind of walk. And you can see these tracks lead off the road, on the road, like into the woods. So it's probably an ambush. And you can see horse tracks leading to the scene, but then they do not move forward to the north. So the horse did not make it any further than this. You don't see any human prints moving off. You do see something weird, though, like large paw prints.
Some big old toe beans.
And the paw prints do seem to lead off to the north.
Oh my god. Is she riding on Rook's back? They're totally girlfriends. Okay. Well, I have a new werewolf fantasy, but do the werewolf tracks go in the direction we're going?
They do. They also came actually from behind you. And also the tracks are very far apart from each other. So one, this creature must be large. And then two, it's probably leaping or running because the tracks are so far apart. It must be moving very quickly. Yeah, they continue to the north. So
that's through like the thick forest, right?
No, so continuing up the road towards Castle Dread.
Oh, okay. Let's clear this road.
I'm so happy we did not find Gwen's body. I was ready.
Oh, you know, gotta keep the suspense high in any good novel. So yeah, you can clear the worst of the bodies on the road while the horses, every once in a while you hear like a animal noise or a howl off somewhere in the distance. And the horses are like very, they look very grateful when you finally clear the road and untether them. And then they can, one of them gives like a sniff towards the black corpse that you can assume was midnight before you continue on the road. The story had said, that dream, that distant dream that you can all vaguely remember, had said that you were just a few miles away from the castle. So you hope that is true as you set off once again on that brutal pace. And within an hour or so, you are rewarded by the sight of Castle Dread. Far up on a hill in the middle of this forest, so it kind of towers over everything, you see the walls of this imposing castle. It is surrounded completely by high walls. You can see a couple towers, so it must be able to look down over the surrounding landscape. And as you do get closer, there is something odd about the castle. The stone is clearly made of some kind of black material, but it seems to be emitting like fog or mist or something. So as you look at it, it's almost ghostly in appearance. It seems to kind of flicker strangely. But you can ride up closer and closer to this castle. And as you do so, you see the imposing walls in front of you. The one point of entry up to this castle, you have to walk up this kind of hill to get there, and then a heavy black wood drawbridge that is currently up. So you are faced with this impassable door into the castle at this point. And by now, it has gone into full night. So the way the moon sits behind the castle, it's casting everything again. And yeah, that weird silvery light.
I mean, this is all pretty aesthetic as hell, and I'm loving it. There's no markings on this giant door at all?
So it's one of those ones, like, on the other side of the walls, there is probably, like, a gatehouse that they would crank to lower down the drawbridge here. But it is up, so in a defensive position. You're looking at the castle walls that must be, I mean, 30, 40 feet high easily. So it is doing its job. Castles are defensible locations, and you are on the wrong side of this door.
How far away is the drawbridge?
So there's no, like, moat or anything here, so you can walk up right up to it and touch that bad boy if you want.
I see.
So it's the height of the castle seems to be, like, you know, in place of moat, because the castle is, it's pretty much just sheer rock on the other side. It's just this like narrow trail that you've walked up.
Mm-hmm. Lou kind of like puts her hand on the door and she's like, no problem. She's gonna just start pressing her hand through and start phasing through the front door.
Hell yeah.
So you checking off one of your boxes to go incorporeal? Mm-hmm. Neat. Have you gotten used to it by now? You've done this a couple times now. Or is it still freaky?
She had the bout where it was not helpful at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, Lou being the control freak that she is, she's just been like remembering what went right and what went wrong the couple times that this has happened. Yeah. And she's like, okay, this time I'm good. And it still feels fucking weird. like a little fuzzy feeling all the way through her body. And then suddenly, like, when she gets through to the other side, it feels like her being just, like, snaps through all the way.
Cool.
And it's just weird.
Yeah.
She hates it, but it's sick as hell.
Yeah. So are you going up to two or three checkboxes at this point?
Two.
All right. Yeah, so you check that off, and as you do, you step through, and almost like stepping through a curtain of water, find yourself moving through this door. And as you pop out on the other side, you find yourself, you're in like a thin stone room that has like doors on either side. And then there is clearly behind one of the doors is actually slightly ajar, and you can see some kind of like large mechanism.
While I'm in here, I would like to be stealthing.
Sure. Yeah.
That is a 9 plus 10, so 19.
You feel very like you're a ghost, like no one can see you.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and make my way quietly into that room and hope for like a lever or something to bring the bridge down.
Yeah, you do, and you kind of poke through, and there are those like little narrow arrow slots on the outer wall that you've passed through that people could use to stand and, you know, shoot people standing outside of the gate. So you have just enough light kind of coming in from the silvery moon to be able to see what's going on here. As you come into this room, this is clearly like the gatehouse. There's this like large cranking chain mechanism. You can see a couple of different levers and like weights that are clearly used to raise and lower the gate. So it seems like, yeah, if you can figure this out, you can absolutely lower the gate and let your friends in. You can see there's a bunch of like dust and rust on it. So it hasn't been used in quite some time.
Lou's gonna just, like, take a look through her pack and kind of get out some of the oil that she keeps with her at all times.
Oh, yeah.
For cooking and just kind of, like...
So it doesn't scream.
Get it all. Yeah. And then she's going to, after, like, looking at it and figuring out the system, try to crank open the gate.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you make stuff. Like, that's your whole thing as a covert operative. So I think this mechanism is relatively simple. So you figure it out. You oil the correct places. So, yeah, it won't be horrible. You do know it is probably going to make some noise as you lower something this heavy down. But you can minimize that. So you do. And on the other side, Aoife and Tony, you would hear, like, there's a puff of dust and, like, some suction that comes off of where this gate is. And it slowly begins to lower, you know, that crank, 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 crank. And you can move out of the way quickly. And there's the boom when it settles down and the floor kind of shakes. Even you, Lou, on the far side can feel that in the foundations.
I am the image of the grimace emoji.
Yeah, I don't know if Tony ever really caught you doing your ghosty business before. Like, maybe out of a brief corner of her eye during that fight. Yeah, because she was standing in front of you before, but...
Well, you did see her jump into the body of the... I guess you didn't see her do it.
Tony just, like, shakes her head for a second. It's like, God, I keep forgetting you can do that. I mean, great job.
Convenient, but weird. Yeah, Lou, you can very quickly figure out that the other door opens up, and so you are standing outside now. So you were just outside that little gatehouse, so you can see your companions on the other side.
You just see human Lou standing there with, like, complete purple lips, and her hands have once again gone transparent, and she's like, okay, okay, let's go, hurry, because that noise.
Yeah, so now you all can see the what is inside of the walls here. So the big four walls formed the outside of this castle, and now you are standing in like a courtyard. At the heart of this large courtyard is the castle proper. As you are looking around, yeah, you find yourselves in what must have been once a very grand, like, reception place. There were hedges on either side that now have since grown out of whatever shapes they must have been carved into at some point. Just rows and rows of these hedges actually obscure your view of where the front doors to the castle proper are. You know, it's just a matter of time walking through them to get to the center. And actually, as now the drawbridge is lowered and everything, you can hear something in the distance. It's the sounds of fighting?
Like a girl fight?
Oh my. Girl fight.
Lord.
Yeah, we are.
You running towards the noise?
Hell yeah, let's go.
We always do.
You make your way, you run through this like hedge maze of overgrown bullshit that's blocking your way to try and find like the front doors of this castle, running closer towards the sound of this noise. And as you do, you whip through a couple of these hard turns. You come to the main, like, plaza area. Right in front of you see these two great double doors that are clearly, like, the entryway into the castle. And in front of it, in that plaza, there's this large stone fountain filled with, like, black, brackish water. Clearly, it hasn't been changed in some kind. And there is this central pedestal in it that looks like it should be holding like a statue or some kind of decoration, but there's nothing there. And fighting in front of this statue, you see a ginormous wolf thing, but it's not quite a wolf because it's got humanoid features. You can see it's walking kind of bipedal, got like ripped clothing hanging off of it on either side, and it's got black fur with these silver streaks. And already you can see that this thing has like gashes on it, tears, matted blood that doesn't seem to be fresh, but it's sustained wounds clearly at some point. And it is like throwing a claw out right at this very large stone bird that you can see now. It's maybe it was a swan at some point, but this thing is like bearing down on this werewolf creature as they are trying to tear each other apart. And you can see clinging to the back of this creature is a human girl, and she does not look good. Like, it's taken everything she's got to hold on to this wolf creature. So let's go ahead and roll some initiative.
21 for Lou. Rogue shit.
Tony got a 10.
Aoife got 15.
Rook, the werewolf, safe to assume. It is Rook, yes. And this giant stone thing, which may have been sitting on top of the fountain based on the platform at this point, are struggling violently with one another. You can see it does look like this creature, the stone bird, can fly. So it is kind of struggling to lift off. And it seems like Rook is using her large weight to keep this thing like dragged down onto the ground at this point. So Lou, you get the first action walking up on this scene right away. Boom. What are you doing?
Yeah. She sees everything going on and she runs in and she's like, Rook, we're here.
There's like a snarling sound that comes from Rook. The jaws are closed down, like grinding through stone. So that seems to be,
hey guys,
maybe acknowledgement. Yeah.
Oh, and real quick, I feel like I mentioned this when we were off stream, but Aoife definitely would have passed off the silver dagger to Lou.
Oh, fuck yeah. Okay. So I will do what I do best, and that is stab.
So, I do a stab, yeah.
I will go with my silver dagger. Don't know if it will help me in any way with a stone swan, but here we go. A 17 to hit?
A 17 will hit. Yeah, so you see the dagger will sink in to this thing. Silver doesn't seem to have any effect on this kind of creature specifically, but it doesn't penalize you either, so it just hits normal.
Awesome. All right. And I will do 3d6 plus d4, 20 plus 4, 24 points of piercing damage.
Oh!
Suck on that!
Monster!
Amazing.
Oh my god. Okay. Yeah. So this thing does not have any kind of special immunities or resistances to non-magical piercing damage. So it's going to take all 24 of that, baby. Where are you hitting it? Like in the stone statue? That does so much damage.
I think that, you know, swans have a very thin neck, so she immediately goes for where there's the least amount to break through and just tries to crack through it.
Yeah.
And she's going to go in with her offhand with one of her knives and try to just, in the same spot, push through so she can try to snap the neck off.
For sure.
My little baby knife. Okay, that's a 16. Does that hit?
A 16 will not do it, so... 17, I will say, is your AC. This thing is tough. It is made out of, solid.
It's a brick house.
So you try to stab in, and it just bounces off. You just can't quite get the grip you need.
Dope. It is going to be my turn.
Okay, sweet. And then that is going to carry us down to Aoife. So you can see this thing was stabbed. It can be harmed.
Haha. And to think I almost picked the spell Shatter for my level up. Damn it! Next time.
Well.
Oh, well.
Next time I attack you with a stone swan, you'll be ready.
I'll be ready. So first things first, saying that, assuming this is poor dear Gwen, who is hooked around Rook's neck, and we're going to see for the first time Aoife use her bonus action to do a healing word.
Ah, wonderful. Yes, how does healing, I always get confused with the healing spells. How does healing word work?
So it's a 30-foot range, and she'll get back 1d4 plus my spellcasting modifier. So, ooh, we rolled a 4, so she'll get back 8 hit points.
Nice. Okay. Yes, she looks much better. But that also probably means that she doesn't have a lot of hit points, if that much was like the difference between life and death. I will say, Aoife, as you are doing this, you are focusing on Gwen and casting the spell on her. You see her for the first time. And even through the blood and everything and like the dirt of somebody who's been traveling hard, there's something very familiar about her. That raven black hair, the pale skin, and these like green eyes.
You can see her little eyebrows kind of furrow as she's like squinting and she's like trying, and she kind of shakes it off and she's like, "Well, we'll think about that later." And then,
oh, what does your healing word look like? Actually, we haven't seen it.
Ooh, so her cure wounds has that sort of like ethereal stitch. So I think her healing word, I think, is just like a big slap of a Band-Aid that you just see just kind of magically appear. Go.
Well, safety. First aid. Amazing. And yeah, as your magic washes over her, she kind of like sputters into life and goes wide-eyed. And that's when you catch that like green gaze. And you see she smiles at you and just lovely. In a way that makes you feel just great. Shiny.
Mm. Aoife has all these train of thoughts begins running through her mind, but she quickly brushes them away to deal with for later, and pointing at this creature, she is going to unleash a vicious mockery upon this stupid stony swan.
Stupid swan.
You're made out of stone. That's dumb. You probably can't even fly.
You're such an ugly duckling.
And so, if it can take psychic damage, I needed to make a wisdom saving throw at DC 15 now, since we got our level up.
Ooh, that's nice. All right, here we go. I certainly did not make that. Stone swans, not wise.
So it'll take 3 psychic damage and will have disadvantage on the next attack roll it makes before the end of its next turn. And that is her turn.
It's a great damn turn. Right. Then that is going to move us along to Tony.
Lou moved forward, right, towards the stony swan. And Aoife is closer to Gwen.
Aoife hasn't moved, I think, both those spells are. But also Rook is, like, right on the swan, too. So you've got no shortage of allies that are right there.
I will throw myself into that tussle and make sure I stay within 5 feet of them. And I have my shield out so they can get up +2 to their ACs. I get that as well. And let's try an attack.
Oh, the +2 to your AC, is that part of your fighter's stance? This was something I wanted to clarify. Was that part of your fighter's stance, or is that something you get from your feet?
You and allies gain +2 to armor class for the duration. when you take a special defensive stance. You can use a bonus action to take a...
So as long as you take the bonus action to do it, then right. You'll get that.
So okay. Not yet then. I'll attack first.
Nice.
With my great sword.
Go for it. Ooh,
that's a 24 to hit.
Hell yeah.
What is she? Oh, kids, we are not here to mess around. She's level 5 and she's spicy. Oh my god. All right. Come at me.
13 piercing damage.
Hell yeah, yeah. And this thing doesn't have any kind of immunities or whatever. So finally, a foe that, like, that 13 damage, it takes all of it. And damn, does that feel nice. Damn, does that feel nice. What are you cutting at off?
I'd probably go for its neck, because I feel like it's the thinnest part to try and, like, hack in and, like, eventually work towards decapitating it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think you do. And you could even bring your sword down on that same spot that Lou has been working on. And you hear a very satisfying crack as, like, the head of this statue, you know, goes spinning off and crumbles onto the ground. But that does not seem to stop the frickin' thing from attacking. So it doesn't seem to need a head to operate.
Then we go for a wing. 17 to hit.
I could cry.
Ooh, yes, that is the number. So you hit.
2 attacks in a row.
Oh, it's so good when the fighters shine.
And then 10 more damage, please.
Ooh, yes. So you are clubbing at this thing. I don't think that's quite enough to get one of the wings off, but you make a good, like, chunk through it. And you think if you keep working at it, yeah, you can break a wing and maybe get its fly speed to be gone. So 2 solid hits as you are chunking off this thing. And as you both, like, are hitting this creature, by the way, there is, like, a low growling sound kind of coming from Rook each time. Maybe a thank you. Maybe it's intimidating. It's so hard to tell.
Now we will take our defensive stance with our shield thrusted forward.
Nice. All right. So while that shield is active, it's everybody within 5 feet of you gets a +2 to AC, right? So Gwen would also get that.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Yeah. I mean, y'all are killing it. I guess I can probably do the hard... Yeah, I'll do the hard mode for the rest of this.
All I hear is that you believe in us.
Yes. And so as you are hitting that, and, you know, Rook has been growling at you so far, you see she moves, like, her clawed hand. So she's still holding onto this thing and, like, putting it down. So she's basically using one of her attacks to, like, grapple this thing and keeping it in place. It's that hybrid form that werewolves assume. So, like, she's a much bigger, bulkier version of a human with this, like, very broad shoulders and, like, powerful, like, ripped muscles through. And you can see, like, the corded, you know, her arms straining under, like, because this thing must weigh, I don't know, 300 pounds. It's like a large size solid stone thing. So she is, like, holding this down with all of her force. As she lets go with her jaws, you hear a growling voice say, "Protect Gwen." And, like, Gwen kind of rolls off of her. You're not sure if Gwen is doing it or if it was Rook bucking her off, but she kind of falls and somersaults and, like, crawls sort of towards you, Aoife, and stands up, like, kind of behind you. And she's like, "I don't know who you are, but I'm really glad you're here." God, and as she gets closer, Aoife, that thing again, she looks so familiar. Maybe someone you just saw in a dream.
I think I know who it is.
She looks like a younger version of that woman who's been reading to you in those dreams. Absolutely her. No doubt about it. As she steps behind you in fear. And you can see, too, that she has clutched, like, protectively in front of her. She's holding some kind of satchel. And you can see there are a few different things in it. Just, you can see sticking out, like, there's some, like, garlic and, like, vials of holy water. And it looks like a big book of some kind, like a big dusty book shoved protectively in this satchel. So then Rook threw Gwen off, using one of her actions to grapple this thing and trying to crush down one of those claws. She's got, like, kind of gripped on that, like, that part between the head and the shoulder. And you see these, yeah, razor sharp talons just crunching into this thing. So she gets a solid hit in as she just pulverizes this part of the creature. Then it is the creature's turn. And oh boy. Something bad happens. As you are looking at this, like, stone thing and, like, all the piles of dust that have been crumbled all over, you start to see as if by magic, like some of that stone is like floats upwards and starts to kind of rebuild the swan as it's happening. So some magic is regenerating this creature. So it is recovering hit points each time on its turn. Obviously, if you keep hitting it enough, it won't be able to regenerate fast enough, but that is something to keep in mind. All right, so it regenerates at the top of its turn, and then it is going to... Who does it even want to attack? Yeah, so it has a few attacks, so let's just be judicious, and you can all get one.
The Oprah of attacks.
Rook is like holding on to one of the wings of this thing. It's just gonna lash out and make this like slicing attack just like towards the, you know, towards the wolf head. And then, oh, a natural 20. Oh dear.
Karate chopped.
Oh shit, that was at disadvantage.
Yes indeed.
Oh yeah.
Great. Okay, then I'm just gonna roll normal. Never mind.
Woo! Doggies.
I mean, I got an 18 not on a crit. The die on that one, but it's not critical.
That'll save your life.
I was going to be like, oh no, this will be really hard without Rook. Eight damage, that's fine. I mean, Rook still looks pretty fucked up, but that's not... She's going to take 26 damage the other
one. That's a heap big amount.
Jesus Christo.
Okay, so it gets a solid hit off on Rook. It looks like it was fatal, but maybe the skull of a werewolf is much harder than you think.
Makes sense for Rook. Mm-hmm. Thick skull.
Makes sense. Hard-headed. It's her superpower. All right, and then we have two kicky feet, though, from the swan. The one coming at you, Tony.
All right.
Yeah, no, a 10 is not going to hit you.
Nah.
So... the kicky feet, you're like, deflect off your sword or your armor. And Lou, other kicky feet. Ooh, yeah, 26.
Ooh, I'll throw in a silvery barbs, baby.
Woo! Is that a reaction?
Remember, every time you're like, wait, this can't be that good.
But it is.
I know, I should just stop asking questions. It can do everything. It's the best spell.
I also forgot I would like to react as well, if there can be two reactions in a turn.
No!
Because I can do a melee attack back.
Yeah, you can all spend your reaction. Yeah, for sure, dude. Okay, so who... all right, since we all want to use a reaction, let's go in initiative order. Lou, you would get to use your reaction first, and then it'd be Aoife, and then it would be Tony.
Mine is uncanny dodge, so since I'm hit, I can half the damage.
Aoife's gonna try and make it so that it doesn't hit Lou with her silvery barb. So, yeah, as she stomps out and she just sort of shouts to sort of give a moment of distraction to the against this creature, yeah, she will cast silvery barb. So it has to roll again and take the result if it's lower.
I think that'll still hit 24. Sorry, okay.
Oh, well. But since she can do that, and then she will pick... Let's see. She's going to pick Tony to get advantage on the next roll that Tony makes, so...
So on your reaction, Tony, you'll get to use that. All right. And Uncanny Dodge halves the damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 18 is going to get halved to 9.
Oh, God. Ooh.
And then Tony, reaction.
Ba-boom. So you got a little tap, so I'm going to take my... sentinel reaction to attack right back.
Hell yeah. And get roll advantage because of your silvery barb.
Okay, so it's going to be 22 to hit.
Who are we? Where are you guys?
Level 5 yeah. is nice
level
up here.
Up and I just don't fucking recognize you. What is it? It's nice in tier 2.
And that's 10 more damage, please.
Ooh, owie. Yeah, so all of that work it did putting itself back together in one fell swoop, it is back to where it was. And there's a honk that comes from the head on the ground, like over there, like 3 feet away. Not today. Honk. Not today, Satan goose.
Sit back down.
This is going to be a stat block in the next Venture Maiden campaign guide. Satan goose.
Amazing. Fucking amazing. Anything else for you, Tony?
No.
Oh, that was the reaction? Okay. God, that was all reactions. Nuts. Wow. All right. Damn. Okay, Lou, we are back up to you. Gwen is a non-combatant.
I'm going to go ahead and try to stab again. That's 13. Then I'm going to offhand attack. And that will hit. That's 22. And then I can still apply a sneak attack. I just don't apply my modifier. 10 piercing damage. And I'm aiming for the wing, trying to break it off so it can't fly.
Yeah, and I think between you and Tony, I think absolutely you can, you with that strike, you hit right at that point that Tony has been hammering away at. The wing just cracks off.
Teamwork!
Teamwork makes the dream work! Yep, so you get a great crack off on this thing, and yeah, you can see now spider cracks are starting to form throughout its body from all of the damage that you have dealt so far. You are doing work on this thing. Then Aoife, we come to you.
Alright, she is going to help out dear... Yeah, she's going to help out dear Rook here, and she's going to give Rook a level 2 cure wounds as her werewolf flesh gets stitched back together. So Rook will heal back 10 HP, and then Aoife will use her bonus action to give Tony a bardic inspiration.
Hell yeah. It's so nice to have a bard in the party, ain't it? Advantage. Bardic inspiration. Healing. It's so good. So good.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, so your little charm glows warm in your pocket, and you feel empowered? Wonderful. And then, Tony, we come to you, freshly inspired.
And we are gonna slice again.
Yes!
Huzzah! That's 17 to hit.
Yes.
Beautiful
yes.
number. It's my favorite number today.
That's a good number. It's the AC number. It's a good number.
Can I add that D8 to the damage?
No, unfortunately not.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with it on these sevens today. That's another 10 damage.
Ooh, shit. Yeah, you deal this damage, and this one is looking fucked up, dude.
Good, because it's about to take another swing, baby. Okay, now we'll add our bardic inspiration, because I was just under the number.
Yeah.
And that'll do, donkey.
Ooh, and since you used it on an attack...
Oh yeah, you get an extra kicker.
You get an extra little bit of juice. That creature, it has to make a constitution saving throw DC 15 or take thunder damage equal to the amount that you rolled on the bardic inspiration die.
Ooh, I rolled a 5.
I got a 14. Your thing is a 15 now, right?
Yes it is. Fresh 15.
Ooh, and I just rolled 2 6s. So that's going to be 15 damage.
How do you fucking destroy this guardian swan?
Amazing.
Oh, it's torn from limb to limb. It's just like the, what's it, like a roast? Like a rotisserie chicken left, basically.
It's everything pops off its arms and legs, and it's like this beautiful brown.
Yeah, what? Snack.
It's glistening.
Yeah, so you slice and dice in like a rapid movement. Now that this thing, you see the spider cracks and you're like, all right. So you just leverage your sword in just the right way that when you make contact with it, this thing just shatters completely and breaks into pieces. You know, the central body now sitting there on the ground and you're all kind of waiting. I think there's a moment for it to like reform or move again and it doesn't happen. So there's that calm. Finally, you notice like you're in the courtyard. So like the light drizzle of the rain like starts again and kind of like flashes you back into the moment, because the minute you entered this castle was just like running. So there's that pause and it goes very, very quiet other than the sound of the pattering rain and like the heavy breathing of this wolf creature around you. And as you all are standing there, you see Rook kind of starts to contort and her body just bulges. You see it's almost like water is kind of moving under her skin in a very like painful way, and you hear some like cracking sounds coming from in her. She looks pretty much exactly like she did because she was already a human. But she is a little bit different. Like her clothing clearly is of the same period as you all, and she's there on the ground and she's kind of like falls to all fours and retches for a moment. Clearly this was not a painless transformation. Gwen runs over from behind you, Aoife, and is like, thank you. You saved us. You're all incredible. Who are you? Oh, I'm Gwen. Sorry.
Before Aoife can say it, I'm Tony.
I know. I was gonna about to put my finger on her lips. I'm Lou.
And I'm Aoife. And it's, I mean, we got here just in time, it seems.
Yeah, we, as you can see, and she kind of looks over at Rook, who is not having a good time still over there. And it's been a hard night, day. I don't even know what time it was. We were hoping to get into the castle and maybe find somewhere to rest and that thing. And anyway, yes, you did show up
just in the nick of time, it seems. How funny how that works.
Why are you here?
I guess I was going to ask the same thing. I don't recognize you. You're not from Talmore.
Nah, we're traveling monster hunters, and, you know, we had a load to bring back to Talmore, and we heard from Victoria about how you and Rick have gone missing, and how Lorelai's to be burned at the stake tomorrow for being accused of witchcraft, and we're here to prove her innocence.
Her eyes go wide, and her already pale skin just goes colorless. Like, as you say that, she's processing all of that really, really quickly. She seems very surprised, especially when you say, like, Lorelai's about to be burned at the stake. She's just like, what the fuck, you know? And she's like, wait, okay, well, monster hunters, that's so great that you're here. But I wish you had been here, I guess, just a day before. How much do you know about Castle Dread? Do you know the legend about Penny, about all of this?
The brief version. We know that Penny was consumed by the Lady of Shadows.
Right, or so the legends say. But anyway, I've been working with Lorelai for a while, and to kind of... And she looks at all of you like she's deciding something. And she looks at you, Aoife, and said, that was magic you were doing, right?
Oh, yes. We had a moment to speak to Lorelai, and she said that you had been working with her to learn the gift. So you need not fear us.
Okay. I mean, that's great. You have no idea how hard it is to live with, or maybe you do, I guess. You're in this world, too. Yes, but I've been working with Lorelai, and I've learned a lot, and I've been trying to find a way to stop all of this. And she kind of points at just the sky and the world and those creatures. And it all started when the champion went missing. And I think that there's a way to bring an end to this. If we can lay the champion to rest, this Lady of Shadow... Maybe it'll all stop, and then we don't have to be afraid anymore. So I've been reading a lot of, I mean, everything I can get a hold of, everything locked up in the church, and I found this. And she takes this book out of the satchel in front of her, and she's holding it, like, reverently. And you can tell this is old. There's nothing on the cover, or if there was, like, a title, it has long since faded away. And I think with this, I can lay them to rest. And with things getting worse every day, more people dying, time was of the essence. And I'm so sorry to hear that that had anything to do with Lorelai. And I didn't even tell Rook to come after me. She just knew. And Rook at this point is kind of like wiping her face and comes back over and was like, what the fuck is going on? And she looks at the three of you.
Lou just, like, raises her hands, and she's like, you got me. We're just here, and we know stuff, but we are not, you know.
Yeah, I do. I change into a dog, a very big dog, and Gwen is looking at you all like, I don't understand what's happening here. Yeah, but Rook came to help, and I'm glad she did, because of course those things attacked me on the road, but I didn't see any other way. It has to be done.
Well, I think that this world is really lucky to have you, because you seem to know exactly what we need to do next, but time is still of the essence if we want to save Lorelai too, because I don't like to win halfway.
Right, of course. And, I mean, we're here. We've fought so hard to get here. We have to finish this. If you'll help me, we can put a stop to all of this, and then we can go back and we can save Lorelai.
Sounds like a happy ending to me.
Thank you. You're heaven sent, I can only assume.
I'm gonna do it. Can I do an insight check on her? I just
sure
feel like in a place like this, it's just good habits.
Yeah. Also, I feel like Lou and Tony, you would also have very much the same feeling that Aoife got, like, as you're looking at her and realize that this is her. This is the woman in those dreams who has been reading you the book, like, undoubtedly. Maybe a little younger, but it's her.
Yeah. Ah, well, fuck. God. That's 9 on my insight.
Okay. You're listening to her. She seems really earnest, if not a little in that way, like idealistic. She feels very much like a young person who's like, I've just learned something and I can help and I will change things, and unburdened by the fears or wisdom
must be nice.
That adults hold.
Keep the fire alive. We need fighters like you.
Yeah.
Fighters
yeah.
like you who don't fight. This is
fighting
fine.
Takes they- all times.
She's got garlic, so.
She ready.
You've seen Aoife swing a sword and hit once.
Yep.
You I did was it. So proud, though. Did it.
And so she seems relieved as you all, you know, agree to help. And then she gets very serious as she says, I don't know what to expect in there. They say, obviously, this place is haunted. So it's probably safe to assume there's more undead inside. But the stories are very vague. What exactly happened to the champion when she went inside? And even vaguer about who exactly this Lady of Shadow is. So I just want to express that danger and just know that it, you do not have to be part of this. If you don't want to, don't feel pressure from me. I will do this because I must, and you do not need to risk yourselves to go with me.
Lou puts her hand on her shoulder and she's like, you're not going to go do that alone. That's terrifying, and we don't leave people behind, so don't worry about it. I wonder, though, if you could help us. We're in search of a book. We've come here believing we'd find it, and oddly enough, I think it's the book that you're holding. Now, of course, while we're going through, you know, anything that you've read in there that can help to help fix this world, please, but I wonder if you'd be willing to let us take it after all this is settled.
Sure. It mostly just reads like a religious text. I've read through it all. Talks a lot about exorcisms, how to lay spirits to rest. There are a few rituals. It's pretty old stuff, but I don't know, maybe what you're talking about, there are some pages missing that I haven't read, so maybe that's what you're talking about, but
that must be.
Of course you can have it.
Blue skin just crawls when she hears lay spirit to rest, and she's like, shh, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it'll be fine. It won't affect all the ghosts in this world, will it?
Elbow nudge.
But anyway, are we ready?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's save the world or something. Get out alive.
Again, Rook's like, again, sorry, what have you figured out about what's going on? I'm still very fucking confused. So you can absolutely, if you want, take some time just to explain everything that has happened to Rook. Yeah, and she's like, I'm in this village, and then I'm going to go save this girl, and I don't even know why. I guess she's cute or whatever. Rook is like, yeah, it seems like, yeah, Rook was just like all of you, thrown into the body of this daughter, and she's like, I had a mom, and it was all very confusing.
Yeah, take 10 to fill everybody in.
if you want to take a short rest and do that outside, that's fine. Rook would love to benefit from that.
While we do get our short rest, we get the Song of Rest. So if anyone spends their hit die, you get an extra 1d6. So
that's rad.
I didn't take a scratch, so
wow. Hey, so
big fighter vibes. The muscles protected you.
Oh, and we love refilling our bardic inspiration pool. Oh, yes, it's the best.
Yeah, so you take that short rest, and then you steel yourselves to walk into Castle Dread. So the large double doors are there in front of you, and there doesn't seem to be any, like, lock or anything. So you just want to push them open?
Let's do it.
So as you do so, ready yourselves, walk into this castle, having no idea what you're going to find. You open up these large doors, and there is this puff of dust once again, and this creaking sound as these ancient doors that have not been opened in a very long time creak. And you see in front of you a large atrium, and clearly magic is at work here. As you're looking into this place, you see out of the living stone on the ground, these trees have sprouted up in these long rows that might have been like a beautiful orchard or like ornamental area once, but the trees are twisted and blackened. Parts are ashy in places as if they've been exposed to a huge amount of heat and just kind of left dried out. These tall, like towering husks around you. And as you step onto the floor, your feet hit something soft, you realize. And you see that there are just pages and pages and pages of parchment scattered across the ground. So you're stepping on this just thick pile of paper. And every once in a while from the ceiling, and you can't really see where this is happening because it just looks like stone at a glance, more of these pages just kind of fall, some of them just becoming ash as they hit the ground. But very quickly, you can see the writing on them is frantic, as if it's the notes of someone who was honestly probably starting to lose their mind. And as you kind of step into this like tree graveyard and all of these words surround you, you just see this long hall of decay in front of you. And at the far, far end of it, there's a raised dais and a chair. Again, looks so familiar. And you've officially entered the center of Penny's power. And that's where we're going to end the episode for today. You did it! You made it into Castle Eldred!
Done did it. Level 5 is sexy.
Mm-hmm, yeah. That was a sexy fight, gang. Feeling really good about it. And I'm excited to use all my hard monsters. Well, thank you all so much for joining us for episode 25 of Venture Maidens. Whew, I'm really, really excited to record the next one and to share more of the story with you all. So thank you all so much for being here. If you like the show, if you're watching on Twitch, please do subscribe. Make sure to like. If you're watching on YouTube, like, follow, tell your friends, subscribe. If you're listening, leave a rating and review. It really does make a super duper difference towards growing the show. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, man. So speaking of supporting us, and Sage mentioned Patreon, if you do like the show, you can go over to patreon.com/venturemaidens and donate monthly to us. We have a bunch of cool rewards and different backer tiers depending on your financial need, you know, what you have available. For as little as $1 a month, you can get hundreds of hours of bonus content, coloring book pages, magic items like adventure hooks, all kinds of really, really cool stuff, behind the scenes notes like about all our campaigns. And then we also offer a bunch of other cooler rewards too at higher level tiers. One of the things we like to do as part of that is thank our donors at the $25 and our $50 tier, just because you all are so amazing and we could not do anything we're doing without all of you. So thank you, thank you. I want to say a personal thank you to Cody Becker at Cody Rolls for on Twitter.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Curry.
Thank you, Muffin at the one on Drury Lane.
Thank you so much, Nissa McKinnon.
Thank you, Richie113 from our Discord server.
And in Farrah's drinking mate tier, thank you, Chris.
Big shout out to Markali.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Fable.
Thank you, Tony.
Hey. Big thank you to Sheepish Gnome.
Thank you so much, Ben, aka Flower Crown Gaming. Thank you. Thank you, you beautiful, wonderful souls who keep our lights on. You are just fantastic. That's all we got for you. So we are going to be back in 2 weeks. I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Conowidge.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I play Luveri Sath, your ghostly drow rogue.
And I'm Nassim, and I was your half-orc fighter, Fetonia Silvertail.
And I've been Aoife Flannery, your satyr bard.
Woohoo! I was also your werewolf dream girl. but that's it. That's all for now. Team Jacob.
oh
that's
my god.
No. Anyway, until next time, everybody.
Venture! Venture!